This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1974. This program forms part of the Langara College Reel History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part, in any form, without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is The Great Depression. The interviewer is Morag McLaughlin. The interviewee is Harold Winch. The audience consists of British Columbia history students at Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus.
30 for 30 is known as the Great Depression. If you're polite. Otherwise, it's the hungry 30s or the dirty 30s. Now, in order to be able to visualize the dirty 30s, that 1929 to 1939, you have to keep certain things in mind. First thing to keep in mind is it was a period, perhaps the world's worst period of unemployment. No job. No work. There was no work. Anyway, now, in order not to die, you have to rely upon a semi-starvation by getting support from your relatives, your friends, church charities, or pauper charities, if it was available. You have to remember that if not, that you will be facing it today. That is most important if you want to visualize the hungry person throughout the world, and right very heavy here in Canada. There's no unemployment insurance. There's no Canada pension. There's no disability pension. There's no welfare as you know it today. There's no hospital insurance. There's no medical insurance. There's no federal responsibility to those in need. There's no provincial responsibility to those in need. Charity is a municipal responsibility and there's no definite plan. So there isn't anything which is taken as a right today, as legislation today for the protection of a person when they need help because of health or unemployment. Now, the build-up for the Hungry 30s, of course, has developed over a period of time. But for historical purposes, they always say that the Depression started with the collapse of the stock market in New York in 1929. When the stock market collapsed in New York, it collapsed all around the world. It collapsed in Montreal and Toronto. And Canada officially had or was in the Depression. Some people found a way out if they were industrialists, financiers, very big businessmen. They found a way out. They put a gun to their head or they jumped from tall buildings. Of course, the workers didn't. They were just unemployed. Now, here again, you've got to visualize the situation a little bit different from today. In the 30s, if you had the price of going into a restaurant, you could buy a full course meal for 25 cents. Or two slices of bread, fish and chips, and a cup of coffee for 15 cents. But we didn't have that much money. It was fantastic unemployment for the length and breadth of the land. It hit all across Canada, but it hit very heavily in our province of British Columbia and the city of Vancouver. Because we not only had the ravages of a depression, complete unemployment, you just couldn't get a job anywhere. But also, if you're back east, or if you're from back east, you know something about the weather back east, especially in the fall, the winter, and the spring. I was 19 years in the House of Commons, and I assure you, I didn't like it when the wind chill had got up to 55 below zero. I mean below zero, real below zero. So, there was two things One, some people still believe, go west, young man, go west. Now, that's the distant pastures were a lot greener. But also, you just couldn't exist outside or hungry in that kind of weather. So, families started heading west. But in particular, the single people started heading west. Now, the reason for that is that there was never, at the beginning, in the early years, any relief or any assistance for a single person. Not in any province or any municipality was there relief for a single person. So if in a family they were on the subsistence relief back east, not enough to get by on, then one of two things very often happened. The parents, they kicked the teenager out, or the single person out, whatever their age was, or that person left so that the rest of the family would have more to eat. And they headed west, where you could get by that. Now, I'm telling you that the single person, they came here by the thousand. Get kind of wet here sometimes. Just kind of chill. They had no place to stay. So for a period there of about 10 years, by the hundreds and sometimes by the thousands, a single unemployed from all across Canada would be sleeping under the old Georgia Viaduct, the Canby Bridge, in store hallway, or like in our own case of our own party, we made our meeting rooms available and he used to come and sleep at night. That's what happened. Now, of course, the situation was rough even when they did start to bring in welfare. Because it wasn't a check, and it wasn't in the start script. In the early days of the Hungry 30s, for a married family, the relief was issued every 2 weeks. What you had to do was that you had to walk downtown, because you didn't have any car fare, so you would walk downtown to the corner of Canby and Pender Street, parking lot there now, but that used to be a city-owned building there. And you would line up, and if you were a Vancouver citizen, married, they would issue you 2 weeks' relief. They'd hack off a chunk of meat, and they'd give you a bunch of dried beans or dried rice and spaghetti and macaroni, practically all starch. You'd put that in a sack, which you had brought with you, and then you would hump that home. And that was your food for 2 weeks. That's the way you got it. There was no rent paid. There was no clothing allowance. The early years, there was no fuel allowance. At all. Now here's an interesting fact you should be remembering. That the welfare was administered by the city. Eventually the province came in with some money, but it was administered by the city. And the province was having to help, there was no money from Ottawa, therefore, to get welfare, even if you were married, you had to be domiciled in the municipality, you had to be domiciled in the province. Otherwise, you were not eligible for anything. So if you came as a family from the east and you applied for welfare, they wouldn't give you any welfare. They'd buy you a ticket and put you on the train and $5 and send you back to where you came from. And when you got back there, the municipality there would buy you a ticket and send you back here. They were just going back and forth right then, because they wouldn't accept any responsibility except getting you out of their jurisdiction. That's if you're married. But if you were single, there was no relief anywhere in Canada at all for anybody. No such thing for a single person. Therefore, you had to scrounge. Had to go around door to door, as they did every day by the thousand across Canada, and by the thousand right here in Vancouver, you go door to door. Not asking for work, because you knew they wanted to work. Asking for a sandwich. Asking for a piece of bread to get by. Or you did what is known as tin canning. tin canning is, you just get a can, you put the lid on, and you punch a hole in it, and you stand on the street corner. It's like a taxi. You try to get some money to eat with, and perhaps a place to stay. Now, of course, you couldn't do this on an individual basis. So you have the formation of two organizations. You have the FUPA, I see some photographs here, the FUPA, the Single Unemployed Protective Association. And as an organization of unemployed, you'd put up a tin can, which were illegal. So you had to have a permit from the city hall, city council, for a tax. And of course they weren't given it. But you'd do it anyhow. If you were lucky, the police would not bother. If the city council was stepping down or the police were stepping down, then you'd be arrested, charged, and jailed. Over the years, the habit developed that if it was there was a public a pronouncement that anyone out tin canning was going to be jailed the next day when they started, they always started at 7 o'clock in the morning so it could get those who were working going to work. If it was announced by the mayor, and it was usually the mayor, that tin canning wasn't going to be allowed, and they'd be arrested on the street. In a case like that, the custom developed that at 6:30 in the morning, half an hour before the tin canning started, myself, as a member of Parliament, would be the first one out tin canning in front of the city hall. And the mayor didn't want to arrest Harold Winch, a member of Parliament. And if he didn't arrest Harold Winch, he couldn't very well arrest any of the others. So that was one way that we used to get around it for a while. And there's an interesting little side right there, too. Now, you take the old city hall with the Holman building down on 16th East Hastings Street. And I used to be right in front of the city hall, and I'd be surrounded by policemen. And I'd be king of the camp. And I'd stay there for a couple of hours until it's obvious the others were out and weren't being bothered. But it never failed to happen. Never failed to happen. But when I was out tin canning that way, the sergeant of the police would come to me and say, Winch, you're wanted in the alley. So I'd go around in the alley, and there I would be given the monetary contribution of all the police that were around to stop the tin can. They'd take their own collection, and they'd call me in the alley and put it in the box. Very interesting. Now, of course, when the guy gets hungry, there's no place to sit. And you're organized. Problems are going to develop when it comes to the insistence of the powers that be of maintaining law, order, and good. So there were demonstrations going on all the time. Sometimes the demonstrations of the single unemployed marching up and down the street, marching up to the city hall, etc., they weren't bothered. But eventually the powers that be would say, no demonstrations, no parade. And then that's when she really got rough. I remember one time we had approximately 5,000 single unemployed from all over Canada, Vancouver. Miserable weather, very miserable weather. They hadn't eaten several days. Things were rough. There were so many coming in. So they decided to demonstrate in front of the city, at Victory Square, where the cenotaph is in downtown Vancouver. We must have had over 3,000, between 3,000 and 5,000 people all there. And they were organized. They marched in their own platoons, companies, forming almost a 5,000 battalion. The mayor of the city said no. So with all the police, he comes up to Victory Square, stands on the steps of the cenotaph, and to thousands of hungry, miserable youth, mostly young people, but not all, of course, he reads the riot act. And you know what the reading of the riot act is? It means that it's an interrupted insurrection. And any three together after 15 minutes constitutes a riot. And three together, after 15 minutes after the riot act, constitutes a riot. You can be arrested. Now you must also remember, you could not only be arrested, but if you were not born in Canada, you could be deported to the land you came from. And I'm telling you, there was plenty of that. I was born in England. 1907. My parents came to Vancouver in 1910. So all my life is Vancouver. All I know is Canada and is Vancouver. My wife, almost the same situation at the length of time. I have two children, two very small children. I'm a lot older than most of you may think I am. Small children. And I started young, too. And I was active. This is before I became a member of Parliament in 1933. So I was called in by the police one day, by the chief, at the request of the mayor. And he said, you're not working, are you? And I said, no. He said, you have no visible means of support. I said, I have no visible means of support. I got no support, period. No visible means of support. He said, one more word out of you, and we'll deport you back to the land you were born in. Now, I came when I was 3 years of age. I was then in my mid-20s, married with two small children, and if I dared to demonstrate or be active, or to protest, I would be deported to England, a country I didn't know anything about at all. And that happened all the time. All the time. Just one occasion, they read the riot act. So happened, we didn't have problems that day as far as violence was concerned. Because immediately that the mayor read the riot act, chief of police, who was a very good man, that was Major General Foster, chief of police. He turned to me, I was there too, because I had followed the mayor all the way from the city hall, trying to stop him from going up there, because I knew what he was going to do. Asked me if I could work with the men and get them to march out in an orderly fashion, because if they didn't, he had to enforce the riot act, which had been read. And it's an interesting feature. I mean, here's the mayor, here's the chief of police, and here's myself standing on the steps of the cenotaph. I tried to grab the book from the hands of the mayor so he couldn't read the riot act. I didn't know at that time that the penalty for that is life imprisonment. Just like marriage. The mayor told him to enforce. He'd read the riot act, and thank heavens we had a police chief at that time who said, Mr. Mayor, you have read the riot act. Your job is finished. You're not in command now. I am. And if Mr. Winch can get these men out of here in an orderly fashion inside of 15 minutes, he's going to have the opportunity of doing it. And we were successful. So there was no violence, but there was no problem solved. So then you have the other side of the picture, where something had to be done. Year after year, this was going on. It was getting worse. No government action. When we asked our provincial government to do something, the answer we got was let them root, hog, or die. Root, hog, or die. And this is at a time in the Depression. Don't forget, there was not only no employment, but if you couldn't buy, you couldn't get. Under our economic system, they would rather destroy things than let people who needed them use them. So they'd burn coffee by the hundreds of thousands of tons rather than ship it and out. In our wonderful Okanagan,